Chapter 11.
They're all staring, said Thane. It ain't that bad, said Bert. It is. Nobody's sitting down. They're just staring.
The troll pointed at a pack of onlookers on the other side of the cafe's short iron gate. The growing cluster of elves and humans wore expressions ranging from horror to disgust to pure confusion as they gawked at the massive troll squatting next to one of Spelljammer's relatively tiny tables. Much of the group broke off and hurried on their way when Thane looked at them.
And what if they are? Not our problem, said the kobold. I don't think our waitress is too happy we're here either, whispered Thane, nodding to a young tinderkin in a green uniform approaching.
Bert began, but the waitress' arrival at their table ushered in an awkward silence and several forced smiles as she set out the table for tea. The kobold waited until she retreated back under the awnings of the cafe's elaborate hut before continuing,
She's just unhappy that we're keeping away the other customers. Maybe we should
We ain't leaving, Bert growled.
I haven't been to Spelljammer's Cafe in ages. I used to come up here all the time when I was riding in an elf's purse. We'd get jam tarts and spiced tea and watch the city go by.
He sat back in his stool and took a deep breath.
And now, after starving in a dwarf's smelly rucksack for over a year, I'm back at Pinnacle Plaza, I have a spiced tea, and a fresh-baked jam tart is on the way. So if our waitress or any other lightling has an issue with us being here, they can go jump off the wall to solve it.
All right,
the troll's voice was heavy with uncertainty.
And quit moping. Try to enjoy this.
I'm trying, but it's hard to, said the troll. I know you see the way everyone's staring at us. You must hear them whispering. Don't you get tired of pretending none of that's happening?
Bert thought about it, then shrugged.
It beats the alternative.
Thane sighed. After a moment, he attempted to pour himself a cup of the spiced tea, but the serving set was designed for someone a fraction of the troll's size. Half the pot sloshed onto the table, and Thane glanced around furtively as he tried to clean it up.
Don't!
Bert began, but stopped himself when the troll flinched. With a heavy sigh, he grabbed a napkin and started mopping up the spilled tea.
Sorry, said Thane. Don't worry about it, grunted Bert. You know, I bet Katha is a fan of Spelljammer's. Did she say that?
Said Thane.
Well, no, but I know her sister loves this place at least, and if you didn't want to take her to Spelljammer's, then you could go to the Astral Plate, or Sigils. Or even the restored timbre, if you want something easier on the old coin purse.
Bert pointed to the different cafes around Pinnacle Plaza as he named them.
But Spelljammer's will always be my favorite, on account of the view.
Bert swept his arm across the panorama beside their table. The rooftops and spires of Andoran fell away before them, streams of people and carts cascading along the streets and stairways that spiderwebbed through the city. Sprites of various colors sparkled in the air, especially around the dome of the Andoran Stock Exchange, which scintillated red and green in the glow of approaching trade sprites. Beyond the city, rolling clouds cast wandering shadows that meandered over the grassland and forest.
It is beautiful, the troll conceded. You and her, sitting up here, sipping spiced tea, talking about flowers and trees and whatever else it is you have in common. Maybe music.
Thane rested his cheek on his hand and gazed out over the city.
She could teach me a lot about music.
Right, whatever, said Bert.
Now, imagine some stuck-up human in velvet tights struts up with his knickers twisted and says you two have to leave.
What? Said Thane, sitting up straight. I don't think...
Doesn't matter what you think. He wants you and the elf gone, barked Bert. Are you going to do it?
No, said Thane.
No, we'd stay.
Why? Pressed Bert.
Because there's no reason we can't be here, said the troll.
Bert stood up in his seat and pointed a triumphant finger at Thane.
Aha! And don't you forget it.
The troll fell silent and turned to watch the clouds roll across the landscape. Bert took the opportunity to clean up the last of the spill and order another pot of tea. Thane perked up when the waitress returned with the replacement tea.
Miss, I'd like a larger cup, please.
We have a couple of beer steins in the back room, offered the tinderkin.
Yes, thank you, said the troll.
The waitress nodded and headed off.
And thank you, said Thane to the kobold. Don't mention it, said Bert.
Seriously, just stop talking about it,
Laruna hissed through her teeth.
Nobody will notice.
I noticed, muttered Gorm. The gods alone know why you're reading that here, and a bannerman might wonder the same.
This is way more complicated than I thought,
Laruna murmured as she looked over the sheet of paper. It showed several woodcut diagrams of an unusually chipper wizard weaving magic at inanimate objects. The illustrated instructions were one of the hallmarks of Creative Destruction's products. Gorm grunted and handed her a pamphlet for the Museum of Andoran's Omnimancy exhibition.
If you have to read the instructions out here, at least hide it, he said under his breath.
Fine, said Laruna.
She tucked the illustrated set of instructions into Gorm's pamphlet and feigned reading it with interest. They sat side by side on one of the long marble benches in the museum's atrium, watching the sparse crowds make their way around suits of imperial armor from the Fifth Age. A few bannermen patrolled the floor in polished bronze armor decorated with the teal heraldry of the Agekeepers, and by extension the museum itself.
I think that's the signal, said Laruna, nodding.
Gorm looked. Geist was standing at the entrance to the Omnimancy exhibit, statuesque.
You're sure?
He asked.
I think so, said Laruna, though she sounded doubtful. There it is again? Maybe?
I didn't see any... Why in the seven hells did we have Geist give the signal?
We didn't want someone to notice the signal. Otherwise they might think he was acting strange, said Laruna, slipping the pamphlet back into her purse.
But the... He just stands around staring at walls half the time. Everybody always thinks he's acting strange,
sputtered Gorm. Let's go, said Laruna, stepping away from the bench. The Solomancer and Dwarf took an intentionally circuitous route through the museum, moving past the giant bones and stuffed drakes of the Dragonkin room, through a chamber filled with famous documents from the history of the Heroes Guild, and into the permanent exhibit on the Sten and the War of Betrayal. Gorm feigned interest in the glass cases filled with fragments of Stenish mortuary sculptures and sacred stones, before Laruna pointed out Jin and Katha. They joined their companions, standing by a large, ornate case with a single, plain-looking spear in it. Behind the case, a mural depicted an elven hero facing off against a Stenish warrior. Katha stared at the mural like any interested museum-goer, but Jin looked conspicuously like someone trying to look inconspicuous.
"What have you got for me, lass?"
Gorm asked, sidling up to Katha.
"It's the Spear of Isan," said Katha.
"That's all fine and good, but I was asking how many bannermen you counted," said Gorm.
Now that he was closer, Gorm noticed dark spots beneath the elf's eyes. Her face looked more gaunt than slender.
"You feeling all right, lass?"
She rubbed at the dark rings under her eyes.
"Yeah, it's nothing."
"You've been acting strange of late," Gorm said softly. "You ain't... It isn't dark thoughts, right?"
Katha frowned at him.
All right, I just had to ask," said Gorm, hands in the air.
I thought we'd have more time in Andoran," sighed the ranger.
"Aye, well, we all got surprised by the museum closing the exhibit," said Gorm.
"I know, I just wanted..."
Katha caught herself and instead gave a reproachful glare back at Laruna.
"I just hoped to have some time in the city."
"Aye, I wanted to have a good long bath," Gorm said.
Katha grinned.
"And we all really wanted that for you."
"Hilarious," said Gorm. "But enough looking at old weapons and making wishes for the city. I counted 8 bannermen on my way from the atrium."
"There are 5 between here and the exhibit on recent runes,"
said Katha. She nodded to the spear.
"And I thought you'd be more interested in something related to Niln's prophecy."
"What's that now?"
"Yeah. If we're to kill that statue Niln was worried about, we may need Isan's spear," said the ranger. "He was the champion of Tandos who killed the last prince of the Sten at the end of the War of Betrayal."
Gorm looked down at the villainous-looking Sten in the mural.
"That's the Dark Prince." "That's what the Lightlings call him, anyway," said Bert. "I prefer that creepy statue that the pigeons avoid." "It sounds familiar."
Thane's broad brow creased as he stared at the black granite statue at the center of Pinnacle Plaza.
"Maybe you heard Gorm talking about it," said Bert. "The young priest that assembled the party believed all of the old prophecies about the Dark Prince. Assembled the group,
to fight and stop him.
I remember Niln, said Thane. Gorm still talks about his prophecies.
Yeah, I wish he'd stop, said Bert. But there's the big guy at the heart of all the legends.
He doesn't look right.
He looks angry, murderous,
horrified, perhaps, said Thane. Most of the statues I've seen today look more noble, determined, heroic, not whatever that is.
Bert sat back up and took another sip of tea.
Yeah, well, he ain't there for the aesthetics. The city would take him down if they could, but there's low magic and prophecy involved. Destiny or whatever.
What do the legends say?
The troll asked, still staring at the statue.
Oh, you know, standard ancient prophecy, said Bert, waving his hand dismissively. That sculpture is supposed to be Stennish royalty, and he's still ticked about the elf who offed him when Tandos struck down Alfadden. And the story goes that one day the stone will come back to life, overthrow the kingdom, take revenge for the Sten, bring back Alfadden and the traitor gods, and rule the world. You know, villain stuff. Heard it 1,000 times.
You don't believe it's true, then?
Oh, I'm sure it's true. To a degree, anyway, said Bert. Thing is, Andoran has more guild heroes than anywhere else on Arth, and if having all these thrice-cursed adventurers around is good for something, it's stopping dark prophecies.
Thane poured himself another tankard of tea, draining the pot.
I didn't know you could stop a prophecy.
Oh, yeah, if you catch it at the right time, said Bert. Why, back when my grandsire was a pup, all the deep gnomes in Scoria thought the world was going to end at the hands of a great darkness from beneath the Ironbacks. They sold all their homes and bought up every can of potted meat you could find to prepare for the apocalypse. And then some hired swords running with adventure capital went down in some dungeon and killed a toothy demon from beyond space and time, and just like that, the prophecy was finished.
Crisis averted, said the troll.
Unless you were a Scorian deep gnome, said Bert. They all lost their homes and were left with nothing but canned ham. I bet they're still eating it.
Thane shook his head.
It still seems dangerous to have all of this set up so close to such an ominous figure.
Oh, to hear the elves tell it, people worried about it a long time ago. In the Sixth Age, nobody wanted to live anywhere near the Dark Prince, so the only folks you'd find near the pinnacle were some itinerant Tinderkin, halflings, and acolytes of various temples trying to stop his return. But at some point, they decided that the statue isn't going to do anything with all these heroes running around, and hey, this view is actually pretty nice. Wasn't long before the elves and other well-to-dos started buying up the real estate.
Well, I suppose it's a good thing that there are so many professional heroes around here, said the troll.
Oh yeah, almost makes up for all the murdering and pillaging those big furless bastards do,
Bert muttered into his tea.
Sure, they kill or steal anything within reach, but at least they're good at their jobs.
I've no idea what I'm doing, said Gorm.
It's got one thrice-cursed crank,
Haraldin whispered over his shoulder.
You should be able to figure it out.
In one hand, Gorm held a device no bigger than a plum, a ball of swirling blue and green, ribbed by bands of silver. A large key protruded from its top. In the other, he held a slip of paper with the words Creative Destruction, Automatic Distraction, followed by 4 woodcut diagrams featuring a smiling hero in a cloaked hood and form-fitting armor. The first illustration showed the grinning rogue winding the key on the top of the sphere. Gorm gave the key on his own device a few good cranks and checked the instructions again.
This looks suspicious, Laruna murmured, nodding at the bannerman on patrol.
Not as suspicious as all of you whispering at me, Gorm growled. Shut up and act natural.
The party loitered around the entrance to the Omnimancy exhibit, each of them strategically positioned to block the bannermen from seeing the alcove where Gorm worked. Haraldin and Laruna stood closest, feigning a conversation about the museum's displays. The instructions' second diagram showed the rogue whispering to the device, complete with a tiny word bubble containing a tree. The third showed the rogue tossing the ball underhand onto the ground, and the fourth showed a tree with large gouts of smoke surrounding it.
Nothing left but to try, muttered Gorm.
He held the ball close to his mouth, whispered, Dragonkin room, and dropped it. The silver bands whipped off the ball as it spun through the air, becoming a set of 10 spindly legs that caught it before it hit the floor. Without a moment's pause, it scuttled off toward the showcase of dragonkin relics, keeping to the shadows as it did so. A moment later, Gorm lost track of it amid the bustling crowd. The heroes quickly filtered into the Omnimancy exhibit. The wing's banners showed sinister-looking wizards in gray robes with headlines that had all the scholarly restraint of a carnival barker. Omnimancers, betrayers of the Academy, read one. Omnimancy, inferior breeding or a dark curse, mused another. Gorm had just stepped through the doorway when thunder roared from the dragonkin wing. He glanced back to see plumes of black smoke billowing from beneath a wyvern skeleton, sending attendees scattering from the perceived threat. Every bannerman in sight sprinted toward the smoke, swords drawn and at the ready.
"Go get 'em, lads," Gorm muttered, stepping out of the way as attendees and guards stampeded past him.
Ahead, the rest of the party gathered around a glass case. Jin pulled the chronobomb from the recesses of his robes and twisted each end of the device, releasing the bars of copper surrounding the crystal.
"Hey!"
hollered someone. Gorm turned. A portly old bannerman had noticed the gathered heroes, and now his eyes fell on the whirling crystals levitating between Jin's hands.
"What are you doing there?"
he cried, rushing forward.
"Blood and ashes," swore Gorm.
Light flared. A low thrum echoed through the chamber, and Gorm felt a whisper across all of his skin at once. A thin glow, a membrane of light, blazed into existence. Beyond it, the world was tinted blue and completely frozen, as demonstrated by the rotund bannerman caught mid-stride at the edge of the bubble. Beyond him, Gorm could see straight down the halls to the museum's atrium, where the fleeing attendees, rushing guards, and even billowing smoke were all locked in place.
"I think it worked," said Jin.
He set the copper pieces of the chronobomb down. The crystals powering the time bubble were dancing through the air on their own now, whirling like drunken fireflies.
"Well, all right then," said Gorm. "Laruna, you're up."
"I'm already on it."
The mage held up a silver mirror about the size of her palm in one hand and the sheet of directions in the other.
"This is one of those times I wish you could weave solomancy," she told Jin. "This needs threads of light and water."
"I can still try to help."
Jin took the instructions from Laruna and held them up for her to view. The heroes stepped up to a long display case. Beneath the glass, a gray staff rested on red velvet. Its top was carved to resemble a dragon's claw clutching a polished sphere of milky white crystal. Words were carved in tight concentric circles around the shaft in a variety of languages, though Gorm didn't recognize any of them.
"I'd give a penny to know what that says," Gorm said.
"It just says rule and virtue over and over," said Heraldin.
"I didn't know you could read ancient languages."
"Bards know many secrets," said Heraldin. "For example, we know to always read the signs at a museum." Geist tapped a bronze plaque on the display case.
"Quiet," hushed Jin. "We need to concentrate."
Wisps of light danced around the mirror in Laruna's hand for a moment, and then a silvery beam burst forth from its center onto the glass of the case. The solomancer slowly rotated the mirror so that the light crept over the surface of the case. The beam left a pale glow as it passed, as though the case was being painted with light. It was a slow process that, judging by the expression on the solomancer's face, was going to take a while. Gorm stepped away to look at the rest of the displays. There were a couple of Omnimancer artifacts from the early centuries of the Third Age, slender devices that looked like they were spun from ivory. Nobody alive had any idea what they were intended for. They sat beneath a mural with several smart plaques that gave a neat illustrated history of the Twilight Order. It started with the heights of the Order's power in the Second Age, when, as a helpful sign explained, Omnimancers had once functioned as magical enforcers that kept the other two orders of mages in line. The pigments darkened along with subject matter as the mural transitioned to the Omnimancer's alliance with the Sten in the War of Betrayal, though the colors brightened again as the Twilight Order met their downfall at the hands of the Alliance of Light. The mural concluded with a few scenes depicting Omnimancers as they existed today, scattered groups of transients, exiled from the Academy and living in the shadows of society. Another large display was dedicated to the story of Antoro Ibsen, an allegedly well-known archmage of the Order of the Sun from the Fifth Age. According to the signs scattered around Archmage Ibsen's personal effects, Antoro set out on a crusade to find hidden omnimancers within the ranks of the Academy. Next to the case lurked a large ebony wagon with bright red wheels. Gorm read that the Dusk Wagon, as it had been affectionately known by compassionless men, was once used by Archmage Ibsen's lackeys to transport hundreds of suspected omnimancers to the gallows before the Academy came to its collective senses and deposed the madman. After Ibsen's departure, the Academy made two notable changes to its laws. First, that omnimancy was punishable by expulsion rather than death, and second, that a mage, regardless of his or her aptitudes, had to use both sides of magic to be convicted of omnimancy.
"We're just about done here," Jin called.
Gorm broke away from the exhibit and trotted back to join the other heroes huddled around the wormwood staff. The case shimmered with silvery light from its glass top to about halfway down its four ornate legs. The mirror in Laruna's hands thrummed with the same light, highlighting the sweat beating on the Solomancer's brow. But her eyes were confident, and she gave Gorm a satisfied grin as he approached. "We've got it," she said.
"Good," he said. "How about the security?"
"There's a heavy lock and an alarm mechanism on the case for our thief to pick," said Jin.
"Please, friend, I am a bard," said Heraldin.
"A bard who picks locks and steals things," countered the mage.
"Many bards do that, but I am a bard who does not pick locks and steal things, because Benny Hookhand might find out I was participating in that sort of activity."
"You're a wanted fugitive," said Laruna.
"Ah, but for guild crimes, not for thieving," Heraldin said. "It's very different."
"How so?"
"The guild would only hang me, for starters."
"Look, it's all well and good to try to avoid this Hookhand fellow, but we've all seen you pick locks," said Jin.
"No, you haven't," said Heraldin pointedly.
"And I suppose all of those locks we've encountered together opened themselves?"
The Noctomancer's voice dripped sarcasm.
"Who can say? How does a flower bloom? How does the sun rise? How does a dragonkin fly when its wings can't possibly support that much mass? More pressingly, how did this cage get unlocked?"
The bard rapped his knuckles on the edge of the case, and the lid popped up with a metallic click. The other heroes stared at the open case.
"But how?" asked Jin.
"It's a mystery," said Heraldin.
Geist looked at Jin and nodded. "No, but I didn't even see you pick the lock," protested the wizard.
"Exactly," said the bard. "Now, you can finish stealing this staff if you like. I'll be over here minding my own business and definitely not taking part in a burglary."
"Sounds good to me,"
Gorm nodded to the wizard, who looked nonplussed as he slowly opened the case. Jin's reluctance gave way to reverence as he lifted the wormwood staff. He ran his fingers over the inscribed words for a moment before handing the artifact to Laruna. The crystal flared with amber light the instant the Solomancer touched the staff, prompting the other heroes to step back.
"Why did it do that?"
asked Gorm.
"It's happy," said Laruna,
holding the glowing staff in one hand and the magical mirror in the other.
"Careful, friend," Heraldin called from the far edge of the time bubble. "You cannot trust a weapon that thinks for itself. Soon, it may start thinking for you as well."
"Perhaps," said Jin, "but many artifacts were given rudimentary desires, like a dagger that wants to kill, or a sword that seeks out a righteous warrior. As long as our goals align with the staff's, there shouldn't be a problem."
"It sounds like the stick is in charge already," said the bard.
"It just wants to be used," said Laruna, staring into the glowing crystal.
"And we ain't got no choice but to use it," said Gorm. "So let's get going."
"Agreed," said Jin.
Laruna nodded and set the glowing mirror in her hand down in the center of the empty case. Jin carefully closed the lid and nodded to her.
"Kalia,"
the Solomancer muttered, weaving threads of light into the glass. A white glow flared for a moment, and then a perfect copy of the case appeared in the same space as the original, concealing the mirror. The illusion was nearly indistinguishable from the actual case, save that it contained an ethereal replica of the Wormwood staff, and it sat at a regrettably unorthodox orientation to the case's legs.
"Bones," swore Laruna.
"I'm guessing it ain't supposed to be sticking out the sides like that," said Gorm.
The new illusionary case was almost perfectly perpendicular to the old one, with half a table leg dangling from each of its four corners.
"Here, just rotate it," said Laruna, opening up the case and fumbling with the mirror inside.
But the magical bauble had expended all its power, and the illusion remained immobile no matter how the Solomancer twisted and turned it. With a grunt of frustration, she flung the mirror away. It flew straight until it passed through the membrane of the Chronobomb's field, where it slowed to a stop mid-flight, as though trapped in the goopy mass of a viscous rhombohedron.
"Careful,"
hissed Jin.
"Why? It's worthless now."
Laruna gestured at the illusionary case, resolutely set at a right angle to its original.
"Who cares what happens to the mirror?"
"I care more about what happens to the rest of the room," said Jin. "Everything in the Chronobomb's radius is actually moving unimaginably fast. Anything leaving the bubble will keep some of its momentum. Look."
He gestured at the mirror. The expended trinket was suspended in the air, but it was also clearly moving, creeping along like a snail among statues.
"That mirror's likely moving fast enough to embed itself in stone," said the Noctomancer. "You could destroy an exhibit, or kill someone."
"Ah," said Laruna. "At the very least, that's going to alert the Bannermen," said Caitha.
"Oh, and do you suppose they might notice this freakish 12-sided display case as well?" snarled Heraldin.
"Hey, that mirror was complicated."
Laruna waved the illustrated instruction sheet at the bard.
"This doesn't make it clear that you're supposed to orient the mirror before you speak the words."
"Well, how did you think it was supposed to work?" said Heraldin.
"Like magic," exclaimed Laruna. "It's magic. It's supposed to do what you want it to. That's what makes it magic."
We have bigger problems," Caitha interrupted.
"We're wanted criminals standing in the middle of a museum full of bannermen next to a conspicuously botched illusion with a stolen relic in our hands," snapped Heraldin. "This is as big as problems get."
It occurred to Gorm that Heraldin's words likely constituted a violation of Nove's first principle of universal irony, but events were moving too fast to dwell on it.
"Fine," said Caitha. "We have additional problems of equal magnitude."
"Like what?"
said Gorm. The elf pointed behind the bard.
"The time bubble is shrinking."
They looked. The shimmering membrane that marked the edge of the Chronobomb's area of influence was beginning to contract. It was a slow, jerking reaction, but it was accelerating.
"Bones,"
swore Laruna. Gorm's mind raced through possible scenarios, searching for one that didn't involve a battle with museum bannermen and guild enforcers. It was clear that the party wasn't going to walk out of the museum with the Wormwood staff amid the confusion, as originally planned. Between the old bannermen running at them, the speeding mirror on track to destroy a suit of imperial armor from the Fourth Age, and the bizarre illusionary case set up behind them, the heroes were sure to be a point of interest for any nearby guards. Now the only option was to flee. He looked down the museum hall to the great doorway on the opposite side of the atrium. The fleeing crowd had shoved the doors open, and beyond it, Gorm could see the streets. It was a straight shot, but it was too far to run. They'd almost certainly be caught and bogged down in a fight halfway across the atrium. Unless...
"Help me get the cart!"
he shouted, running back to the display on Archmage Ibsen.
"What?"
asked Caitha. "How will that..." Gorm was already at the dusk cart.
"Just help me!"
The open-topped cart's wood was old and faded, but it was solidly built, with two steel axles for its four iron-ringed wheels. Gorm's axe made short work of the cables that held it in place, and then Gaist and Heraldin helped him wheel it to the center of the Chronobomb's collapsing hemisphere.
"Everybody in,"
Gorm said, as he and Gaist carefully lined up the front of the cart. There was a narrow path to the door through the fleeing attendees and running guards. It felt like trying to thread a needle from several hundred yards away. I'm still not sure how being inside a vandalized exhibit will make the museum guards any friendlier, said Heraldin.
The trick is not being in the museum anymore, ain't it?
Said Gorm, running around the cart. Geist vaulted him inside before leaping into the cart himself.
We're driving this cart out of here just like one of them jet sleds at Boomer and Buster's. Laruna, make a big fire.
A what? Asked the Solomancer.
You know, a big stream of flame,
said Gorm, waving his hands in an ill-informed facsimile of a sorcerous gesture.
A big fire to push us along like the jet sled.
It doesn't work that way, said Laruna. If it did, I'd get blown off my feet every time I cast a spell.
It could work if you had focus, suggested Jin. The jet sled must have used a latticed weave channeled through a focal nexus.
Didn't that jet sled crash? Heraldin asked Gorm as the mages fell into whispered jargon.
Aye, said Gorm, rapping his knuckles on his steel helm. I'd try to find a helmet.
The bard paled visibly. Okay, said Laruna, nodding. It's worth a shot.
I'm not entirely sure how well it will work, Jin told her.
But it's bound to work better than sitting around yammering,
said Gorm. He stood toward the front of the cart's bed and grabbed the reins from the driver's seat.
Now, how do you steer this thrice-cursed thing?
I think it has to do with how you whip the oxen, said Caitha.
And if you ain't got an ox?
The elf shrugged. Close your eyes and pray?
I figured as much, Gorm said. A plan old Niln would be proud of, eh?
Caitha found a smile for the priest, small and bittersweet. Seems like the only plan we've ever had. All right, I'm ready.
Laruna had firmly wedged the shaft of the wormwood staff between two of the boards in the center of the wagon's floor, positioning the gem at the rear of the cart.
Then go!
Shouted Gorm, watching as the time bubble jerked and contracted.
Everybody hang on!
Here goes. Laruna wove thick amber cords of fire into the staff's gem. The crystal thrummed to life, emitting a red glow, and shortly thereafter, a massive gout of flame. A roar of fire immolated the empty case formerly occupied by the staff in the blink of an eye. The wagon lurched into motion, propelled by the massive blaze roaring from its rear. Caitha cleared her throat.
Well, this was oversold, said Heraldin, watching the museum's exhibits crawl by as they inched forward.
We're improvising new spells with a staff that hasn't been used for over a century, snapped Laruna. This isn't easy.
Well, I'll tell that to any bannerman that happened to stroll by, said the bard.
It's fast enough, said Gorm as they creaked along.
How? It'd be faster if we hooked it up to a pair of dead oxen, said Heraldin.
It's like the mirror Laruna threw, said Gorm. We're really moving faster than the speed of time or some such nonsense. So, when we come out of the chronobomb's bubble, we'll keep enough momentum to be moving it. Jin, how fast will we be going?
The Noctomancer gave a slight shake of his head, lost in some mental calculations. The wizard must have reached a dire conclusion, as all of the color drained from his face.
Oh, gods. Everybody hang...
The wagon pitched forward, the chronobomb's radius contracted, and the heroes slipped through the glowing blue membrane.